Although I'm an atheist, I've got two godsons. Don't ask me how it happened. It simply did. And one of them today, a charming seven-year-old, came round to the house with Dad because he's studying Egypt and he wanted to have a look at some of my Egyptian stuff. And we were peeking inside one of the sarcophagi, and it became obvious that although this was a fully-fledged Egyptian official that once occupied it, he would have been tiny. And no one that I can think of, not even Bob Hawke, could fit into it today. This is because people are getting bigger. Look at suits of armour at the Tower of London, and you'll find that most of them could be worn comfortably by today's jockeys. And that's because we are getting taller. Europeans have added 7 inches in the last 200 years, and they're still going up half an inch a decade, and the Chinese and Japanese are putting on over an inch every 10 years. Now, being on the shortish side myself, I'm very well aware of the bias and the prejudice against people of diminutive stature. So tonight we're doing affirmative action again, more remedial work. This time we're attacking shortism. Now, tall people have it good. We encourage them to reach for the stars. We actually pay them more, almost by the inch, and tend to believe they're more talented than short people. And forget the polls, folks. Keating is a shoo-in. Voters are biased toward verticality. So we seem to accept that increased human stature is a good thing, but, well, it isn't. It isn't. When you think about it, what have tall people ever done for us lately? And they pose a great threat to matters environmental, as our next guest is going to tell us. Now, Thomas Samaras is a management system specialist who's been studying the ramifications of size for 20 years. And he's written a very interesting book on it. I'll hold it up to the microphone for you. The Truth About Your Height, Exploring the Myths and Realities of Human Size and Its Effects on Performance, Health, Pollution, Survival. Thomas, will history judge our reverence for height as a dangerous folly, do you think?
I believe so. I believe that we will, in the future, people will look back and say that that this was not a good trend and that the change in direction from bigger to smaller was the smart way to go, and I believe that's where we're going to go eventually.
Are we dealing simply with natural selection, or are humans intervening in the process?
Well, okay, we have two factors that affect how big we get. One is, of course, genetics, and the other is the nutrition that we're having. In the growth that you mentioned, the 7-inch increase in height that we have seen in the last 200 years, parallels the Industrial Revolution. And actually, the United Nations had a big study done recently. Actually, it was published in 1991, where they evaluated our diet and found that the diet that we have adopted is actually responsible for an epidemic of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. And
Thomas, I think most of us would accept that, and yet the fact is we get taller and, by and large, we live longer.
Yes, that's a little bit of a misapprehension there, because there's no doubt that our life expectancy has gone up very much in the last 50 years. For example, in 1900, in the United States, the average life expectancy was 50 years old, and now we're looking at 75. But that increase in life expectancy is primarily due at the front end of our aging. In other words, we've reduced infant mortality. We've reduced the number of women that died during pregnancy. We have reduced the number of children that died from infections and various kinds of diseases because of the medical progress that we have made over the years in terms of immunization programs and antibiotics. But once you get up to about 50 years of age, the life expectancy isn't that much different. It's only a couple of years longer nowadays.
Thomas, tell me, let's put a six-foot man on the left here and a five-foot man on the right. I shouldn't say feet, because we decimalized in a piece of insane policy some years ago, and I don't even understand it. So a six-foot man there, a five-foot man there. How much more does the six-foot man consume, for example, say, in clothing than the five-footer?
Okay, there is, most people don't realize, between 5 feet and 6 feet is 20% higher stature, but the surface area actually increases by 44%, and his body weight would increase by 73%. And body weight, for example, is your food intake is proportional to your body intake, so that means that a 6-foot person would actually consume roughly 73% more food and water. In terms of clothing, it would be 44% more material.
It'd also take a lot more energy to shift him around from, say, New York to Chicago. From
absolutely. Airplanes, in other words, in an airplane, you have how many people you fly in an airplane depends on how long their legs are and how big they are. And you could fly, if we were smaller, we would fly a lot more people in an airplane than we do now, and the cost of energy per person would be much less. I've done a comparison of energy intake in the United States alone, comparing 5 feet to 6 foot people, and it would increase the energy consumption per year for roughly 260 million people by 40 quadrillion BTUs. Which is a huge amount.
That's
of
exactly the same figure that I calculated. Exactly the
very
same.
Good.
It's on the back of my envelope here.
That's amazing.
Well, mate, that's very. Now, you calculate that by 2060, the average chap will be 6 foot three, therefore poking his head through the ozone layer, and we'll have laid waste to what? Rainforests and.
Yes, unfortunately, things are worse than we think. According to the San Diego Zoological Society, by 2060, we're looking at the elimination of rainforests in the world. And the impact of that, of course, is not just because people are larger. It's also, of course, the population increase. We're looking at 12 billion people by 2060. But the point is, most people don't even realize, and scientists seem to ignore the fact that you cannot just look at numbers. You have to look at how big the average person is. And if you look at Americans, for example, back in World War I, the average American male weighed 140 pounds. Today, the average American male is 184 pounds.
Let me just tell the listener some of the famous short people. I rattled off at the head of the program some fine Australian examples who wouldn't mean anything to you. But, dear listener, Lawrence of Arabia, Harry Houdini, Pablo Picasso, my old mate Voltaire, Buckminster Fuller, Yuri Gagarin, St. Francis of Assisi, Queen Victoria, Deng Xiaoping, Oprah Winfrey, I don't know who that could be, I don't know that name. Attila the Hun, that's one of my favourites, well, he was under 5 foot. And Alexander Paper, mere four foot six inches. What about sexual performance? You know, are little people perhaps a bit more tumescent?
First of all, there was a study done by Masters and Johnson, which I'm not sure you people in Australia are familiar with. But
even Australians know about Masters and Johnson.
Okay, they did a study. One thing was interesting was because you'd think smaller people would also be endowed with smaller organs, but they actually weren't. There was apparently no correlation between the size of the male organ and the size of the body. So that's interesting. And so there's no difference there, whether you're tall, short, or...
Well, Thomas, I think we can extend this study. I'm going to ask the listener to take out their tape measures and to, if they wouldn't mind, measure themselves and send me a little... Just send us in a card.
Okay, with your height,
we'll verify Thomas's research is here.
Now, so, and the other thing, the studies with women, they did a survey in France, and they found that shorter men were more energetic and more creative lovers. So the majority of the French women in the study found...
Well, shorter. Thomas, you and I always knew that, didn't we?
I think I kind of knew that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I love your passion. I love the I like your enthusiasm for this. But what on earth are we going to do about it?
Well,
I mean, you're flying in the face of history, social preference, concepts of elitism, which are ingrained.
Well, it's psychosocial. I admit, and this very culture is very powerful. And the only reason that we believe in bigger is better is goes back to primitive times, that where we associated might with right, and bigger people were stronger and they dominated.
It's still true in the corporate world, Thomas. The average height of CEOs, I think, would be way above the average.
Yes, they're taller, and because they select people because they think taller people are more imposing, and we have these myths that, oh, a taller person is smarter, more aggressive, more controlling, more dominant. But, you know, if you look through history, if we go back to ancient Greeks, now, ancient Greeks were a wonderfully creative and dominant and strong, powerful people. The average male in Greece averaged between 5'2" and 5'6", puts them on a 5'4". How about the Japanese executives? We have the head of the electronics industry there, He's 5'4", 128 pounds, and so are a lot of the other Japanese. It is only a culture. It's not a reality. In other words, it doesn't mean that...
Yeah, but Thomas, look, I breed cattle, and we are starting to breed them smaller. There's been a tendency to grow ever larger cattle, and it's crazy. You know, the meat's too big, they're too big to whack in trucks, they walk through fences. So there's a tendency now to breed for smaller sizes. But how are you going to persuade human beings to do that?
Well, I think part of what I'm doing right now is an educational process. I have had a lot of recognition among the publications in the world and in the radio interviews explaining that you have to understand that there are many, many advantages for smaller sized people in terms of health, in terms of productivity, in terms of flexibility, in terms of injuries, everything gets less. The main advantage of being taller is having brute strength, but other than that, and a longer reach. But if everybody is roughly the same size, small size has these tremendous advantages. Now, how do we do that? Let's say we all agree that smaller size is better. How do we do that? We can do that the same way that we have gotten bigger. Our size has been paralleled by a very rich diet, high in protein, high in calories and sugar. And we can reverse that. We can come up with diets that are nutritious, that are wholesome, that are filling, but yet do not slow the progress of growth in our children and produce smaller, ultimately smaller people.
Thomas, don't disappoint me by confessing that you're really 6'3".
No, I'm not. I'm 5'10".
Five. Well, you see, you're right. It's excessive, Thomas.
Yes,
it's
too much. I am. What I consider myself excessive in size. You're right. But that has nothing to do with it. And I don't want tall people to feel bad about it. It's just that I think we have to think about the future of our children and the future of the world. And the advantages are so numerous. People don't realize that human beings are bigger than 99% of the animals on Earth.
And are we? Is that right?
Yep. Yes.
If you can't,
we think of elephants and whales as being bigger and tigers, but you have, of course, you have all kinds of foxes, and you have mice, and you have
wombats, for instance,
and lizards. They're much smaller. So I'm not talking insects. I'm talking actually animals. But we are bigger than most animals. And history has shown us that larger animals are more susceptible to extinction. In fact, in North America and South America, about 10,000 years ago, we had a massive extinction of 135 species of animals, and almost all of them were 100 pounds or over.
Thomas, the trouble with your excellent tome is that you're a bit honest in the facts in there. We learned that an MBA earns $600 a year more for every inch he stands above a comparably qualified colleague. It might be better to leave things like that out.
Well, you're too
honest, Thomas, for a crusader.
Pardon me?
You're too honest for a crusader.
Too honest. Well, that's what Dr. Elric, who read the book after it was published and raved about it, said it was a wonderful health book and exercise book, as well as on longevity and human size. But he said it was a very balanced book. He felt I was very balanced in my presentation. And I feel I'm going to continue being that way.
Well, Ross Perot will love you, won't he?
Yes.
We'll give you a great time when you go on the Oprah Winfrey show.
But we have, by the way, many, many actors in Hollywood that are on the short side. Most people, we think of them as being big when we see them on screen.
Well, Alan Ladd used to stand on a box, didn't he, for his love scenes?
He was 5'4".
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise, who is very famous here in the United States, is only about 5'7", according to a magazine article that I read. And Charles Bronson, Jack Nicholson, Al Pacino.
And President Reagan was only 4'3". They just took trick photographs of him, didn't they?
No, he wasn't. James Madison was 5'4". He was, our third or fourth president. He was about 100. He was the smallest president.
Napoleon was short. Hitler was short. There's a great advertisement for shortness.
Alexander the Great was not very big. He was about 5'7". And, of course, if you go, like you said, in ancient Egypt and Greece and Rome, people were much smaller. And,
Thomas, we've got to go. I think the book's exciting. I think it's a great argument, the truth about your height. Can you pronounce the name of your publisher for me?
Oh, it's Tecolote Publications. It's a California publisher, and it's an Indian name.
Well, all the listener in Australia, we average about 3'7", the listener to this program. They'll all rush out tomorrow and order it. Thank you, Thomas.